twin searchlights shine upward, forming a W. Letters read TWC. The three inverted triangles of light fade out one at a time. In another logo, a line stretches across the screen. Words slide out from its top and bottom. Myriad pictures. Now, letters with blurred edges spell out Unison. Streaking trails of light behind them, the letters coalesce to form a single glowing circle. In another logo, brilliant light fills our view, then shrinks into a snowflake-like pattern. The words Dreambridge Films hover beneath it. An animated film reel forms a W above the words Standard Deviations. At an intimate restaurant table, a slender woman sits with her arms crossed. She gazes at her scruffy companion.
Would you still love me if I couldn't pay for dinner?
Possibly.
He raises his eyebrows and her eyes widen.
Yeah.
She tilts her head with a smile.
What do we do?
I'm thinking.
We could have a big row. And throw some shit. Might kick us out.
Been done and it'd draw too much attention.
She reaches toward her feet.
What are you doing?
Taking my shoes off.
Ooh.
I'm going to leave first. And then when the time is right, like when the maitre d's not looking, you meet me down the street.
She pulls his chin to her. She leaves. The scruffy man's smile fades. With a slack jaw, he looks around at the customers seated nearby. With a smile, he leans back and slowly rises from his seat. He saunters toward the exit. His eyes dart from face to face as he passes the staff. A waiter notices him.
Excuse me, sir.
The scruffy man turns and spots the check in the waiter's hand. Outside, the slender woman ambles away from the eatery as her partner runs out.
Run! 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 Run!
The couple dashes down the street, passing a line of cars as they round a corner into a park. A scruffy young man looks back for anyone chasing them. Street lamps glow overhead as they jog further into the darkness. The scruffy young man trips over a downed tree branch and falls. He rolls onto his back and holds his shoulder as the woman rushes over. He grins up at her.
Baby, are you okay?
Oh, I'm dying.
Straddling him, the young woman sits atop his thighs.
Did we lose him?
I don't know. Really, did they even chase us?
Her long hair hangs down as she presses her face to his cheek. They begin to kiss. He wraps his arms around her shoulders. She entwines her fingers in his dark hair. As he turns his head, she kisses down his neck.
Hey. Hey, look at them.
She turns her head. Fireflies dance against the night sky.
This is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
As he watches the fireflies, she nuzzles her nose against his cheek, then nibbles his ear.
Hey.
What?
There's only one heart in this body. Have mercy on me.
Caressing his hair with her hands, the slender woman licks the tip of his nose.
Shut up.
As she gazes into his eyes, the slender woman lays her palms flat against the grass. Leaning in, she kisses him. Fade to black. Titles appear. The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. Them. Daytime. On a bridge overlooking the city, the slender young woman rides a bicycle. With her hair wrapped in a ponytail, loose tendrils float out behind her in the breeze. She stares off with a pensive expression. She turns her head to glance out over the water beneath the bridge. Bringing her bicycle to a halt, she dismounts, setting the vehicle against the chain link barrier. She walks away from her bike and further down the bridge. She passes a strolling older couple, blurred in our view, and another pedestrian. The blurry form of a runner jogs past her. The slender young woman stops to peer down at the water. She grips the fence, then presses her head against the chain link barrier. She pushes off, then turns out of view into an overlook. A man rushes toward her.
Hey!
Our view plunges beneath the water, then up at a mass of bubbles which become a blur of light. As our view darkens, we crest above the water's surface. We take in a small boat as we bob up and down in the water. Two sets of masculine hands reach into the water, gripping around the slender young woman's shirt and arms. They drag her unconscious body into the small craft. Now, the scruffy young man enters a hospital room. With a doctor behind him, he stands at the doorway and stares off. As he moves into the room, the doctor shuts the door behind him. The slender young woman sleeps, a sling wrapped around her arm, her breathing steady. He stands beside her bed. Now, she sits in her street clothes, staring off. A nurse enters.
Mrs. Ludlow, you ready?
The woman grabs her shoulder.
Yep.
Forcing a smile, she stands. As she leaves, she slings a large duffel bag over her shoulder. In the corridor, she waves.
Hey.
Hi.
A pretty short-haired blonde fumbles to hug her.
Is it gonna hurt? No, it's fine.
With a furrowed brow, the slender young woman pats the blonde's back as they embrace.
Is this all your stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You sure? Nice meeting you.
Yeah, have a great day.
Now, the two young women walk up to a house where an elegant older woman sits on the steps. She holds a glass of wine.
Ça va, la vilaine?
Ça va?
The slender young woman leans down to kiss the older woman on the cheek. Taking the wine glass, the slender young woman takes a big sip and heads into the house. The blonde follows her inside as she sets down her bag. The slender young woman ascends the stairs. She stops as her eyes focus on a photograph hanging on the wall.
Where's Philip?
He's asleep. He's exhausted.
The older woman grabs the photo.
What should I do? Just what it's on there.
In an upstairs bedroom, the slender young woman stares at an iron-framed bed. As the elegant older woman enters behind her, the young woman downs the wine. She sets the glass on a small table. She looks at a hanging film poster titled A Man and a Woman.
I close your wireless account.
Thanks.
What do you want to do about all your stuff in the city?
The slender young woman shakes her head.
You've got some clothes here in the closet, and I have some old stuff for you in the attic if you want.
I'm sure that'll do fine.
A bearded, smiling older man in glasses enters.
It's just like old times.
Hey, Daddy.
The slender young woman embraces her father. He removes his glasses as he watches her cross the room. She stares down at knickknacks on a table.
So what happens now?
I'm guessing you give a speech of some sort?
What do you want to do, Ella?
Something else. I'm open to ideas.
You could take some classes.
Elle nods.
Can we talk about it later?
What about Connor?
She looks down and turns away. A young boy enters and runs over to Elle.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hi.
They hug. The short-haired blonde enters.
Missed you.
I missed you. What'd you guys do today, huh?
Chasing butterflies.
I catched one.
You did? Let's give her some time to get settled in, okay, babe?
Bye, honey.
Bye.
As the boy and the blonde leave, Elle removes her jacket, revealing her arm still in a sling. She sits in a chair.
Do you need anything?
Nope, thank you.
I'm going into town in a bit and want to join. Get out.
Yeah. You yell up at me when you're going?
Elle's father slides his glasses on as he exits. Her mother's gaze lingers on Elle. As the young woman turns away, the older woman leaves. In a restaurant kitchen, the scruffy man sits atop a counter near a young man wearing glasses and a chef's jacket.
That's brutal, man. Maybe she wants you to go after her.
No, she doesn't.
Maybe wait a couple of days and go after her?
Stu, don't.
Well, I guess... when someone flirts with extinction...
Shut the fuck up.
Damn, sorry, I don't know what to say. What am I supposed to say?
You don't have to say anything. Just shut up, drink, and talk about the weather.
Hey, the dude at table two says he's gonna kick your ass if he doesn't get his chicken satay soon.
Well, you'd suck my balls.
You should tell him that yourself.
Table two?
Mm-hmm.
I'll deal with it.
In the dining room.
Hey, we're out of beer.
What? How can we be out of beer? We got two boxes back there. Go check them.
A customer flings something at the scruffy young man.
Don't throw shit in my place, man. What's your problem?
Where's our fucking food, man?
Listen, don't threaten my chef,
Calm down.
Look, hey, dude. If you threaten my chef again, I will drop kick you out of the fucking room. Understand?
The customer throws something. The scruffy owner punches him and tackles him. The customer punches the owner to the floor. Stu enters and helps him to his feet.
Hey.
Get the fuck out!
Fuck you!
Yeah, fuck you, man! Nice comeback, very nice. Get out of here, you too! Get out! You get your stupid sunglasses too? Fuckhead!
At night, Connor struggles to lock the restaurant's front door. He heads off. Stuffing his keys into his pocket, he crosses the empty two-lane street. In his apartment, Connor tosses his keys onto a table near the door. A dark bruise circles his left eye. He walks to the bedroom. As he stops in the doorway, he leans against the door jamb, staring down at his unmade bed. He pulls out a phone and dials. Connor knocks his head against the door. Pulling the phone from his ear, he dials another number. He steps into the bedroom.
Hello?
Mary?
Yes?
It's Connor. Is Elle there? Hello? Hello?
He stares at the phone, then turns it off. Daytime. Connor walks down a street with his bag slung over his shoulders and a fishbowl in his hand. As he ascends a stoop, he flings a bag against the door. Reaching into a planter, he grabs a key. Inside, a well-dressed middle-aged man stands in the kitchen, eating from a cereal bowl. Connor enters the front door and closes it behind him. The well-dressed man steps out to view the commotion in the foyer. Connor stares in his direction. The man puts down his bowl. Still chewing, he approaches Connor.
Hey. I thought I could stay here for a little bit.
Pursing his lips, the well-dressed man looks down at the fishbowl.
Hi, Ralph.
The two men stare awkwardly at each other.
You know where the guest bedroom is?
Yep.
There's towels in our closet in the hallway. Not much in the fridge. Got some Cheerios.
That's fine. I mean, I can go get some stuff. That's easy.
Well, I gotta get to the restaurant.
Okay.
Night.
Connor climbs the stairs as the man exits. In Elle's bedroom, a pile of notebooks lies on the floor. She reaches down for them. Sporting stylish shorter hair, Elle shoves the books into a bag. She rests her arms atop the bag and stares off. She rises and steps away. Now, Elle walks down a street with her father. Stu jogs past with his bike.
Whoa, hey! Hey, Elle!
Wearing sunglasses, she turns to face him.
Hey.
Hey, Stu.
Wow.
They embrace.
How are you?
You remember my dad?
Hey.
Stu shakes hands with her father.
How are you?
Good, thanks. You're the chef.
Yeah. Chef. All right.
How's the restaurant?
Good. Yeah, it's going good. It's going really well.
Well, you have to register.
We have to head off.
All right. Yeah, I got to get this back to the restaurant, but it's good. Yeah, it's
good. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Hey, if you ever want to get, like, coffee or something, you know, shoot me a text or call or something.
Okay.
Good seeing you.
Stu watches them as he wheels his bike away. Now, Elle and her father approach a building.
So Lillian is expecting you.
Mm-hmm.
She and I were colleagues at NYU.
I know, you told me.
You have pencils and notebooks and all that.
Yes, Dad.
I have class and I have patience, so I guess I'll see you at the house later tonight.
Okay.
Elle walks to the revolving door.
Hey, Elle?
Yeah?
Have a good first day.
I will.
Elle enters the Cooper Union building. Inside, she sits on the floor, reading a book outside an office. A short-haired woman steps out. A name on a placard reads, Lillian Friedman.
How's the weather down there?
Balmy.
Do we have an appointment?
I'm Eleanor Rigby.
That must be tough.
I'm here to talk my way into your identity theory class.
Oh, you're Julian's kid. I need some caffeine. You're welcome to walk with me.
Okay.
Outside, they walk.
So is Julian into the Beatles or something?
Sort of.
What do you mean, sort of?
He met my mom on the street during one of the Beatles hoax reunions. There was a room they were going to play a show here before Lennon died, just like the one they did on the rooftop in London. My parents stood next to each other, waiting for the band to never show.
Nostalgious.
That and my dad's surname is Rigby.
You must detest the Beatles.
No, not really.
Do you want something?
Elle holds up her coffee cup as Professor Friedman takes her place in line at a truck.
Double espresso, three splendors, please.
Another customer approaches. Elle moves out of his way.
So why do you want to be in my class?
Your course sounds interesting. And look, you're a colleague of my dad, so.
Yeah, well, you gotta do better than that.
You want me to make something up?
Well, most people do. You're just taking classes, just take classes, right?
Something like that.
Well, let me save you some time. All the perpetual students, the hedge fund wives, and your generation of too many choices, they usually go to Tim Gunn's class and listen to him talk about Project Runway, or you could take the art history class on the advent of color photography just for a good cocktail party conversation.
My generation of too many choices?
Democracy has its drawbacks.
Some double espresso, three splendor.
Thank you.
With her mouth open, Elle stares at the professor.
You're teaching classes just to teach classes, right?
Something like that. I'm having a month. I'm sorry. Father didn't give me much warning or tell me much about you. And I'm really not one for nepotism. I just got the call asking if I could squeeze you into a class. So I don't really know who you are.
It's okay. Neither do I.
Now, wearing her dark sunglasses, Elle steps down the sidewalk. She clutches the purse strap over her shoulder. She glances across the street, then crosses an intersection. She stops to wait at the other side. A graffitied wall behind her reads, "Love isn't missed by minutes, it's missed by miles." She continues on a crosswalk, but stops halfway. She glances over her shoulder as if searching for someone before continuing on. Now, she enters her parents' kitchen through the back door. Her mother cooks at the stove and holds a glass of wine.
You want to help me?
You're making kidneys?
Mm-hmm. With summer vegetables and some basil.
Mm.
You remember when you first had them in Luberon?
Mm-mm.
No? You were 4, and you were so fat.
Elle nods with raised eyebrows.
My mother and I would cook a big plate of them and left it on the kitchen table, and you would eat one and the other until the plate was completely empty.
Elle grins slightly.
You went to nursery school that fall, and all these women gave me those weird looks, and they were wondering what I was feeding you with.
Well, that was a butterball.
I felt completely stupid. Like I had no idea what I was doing the way those women looked at me.
Did you?
Did I what?
Did you know what you were doing?
I think I didn't realize I wouldn't be able to retrieve all the opportunities I threw away then.
Mary's gaze grows distant. Elle looks down thoughtfully.
You're not the only one who's done stupid things to herself.
Mary strokes Elle's hair.
My darling.
Elle's eyes drift away. At a restaurant, Connor eats with Stu.
I have no clue where she's going. She turns off her cell phone and like that, she's vanished. I mean, does that make sense to you?
No comment.
Come on, knock it off.
No, whatever you want to call it. I plead the fifth. Like, I tried to be helpful, I pretended, but it didn't work out, so I'm just gonna do that.
All right, look, I realize that I've been a little off balance lately, but I think with hindsight, I'm learning to deal a bit better. A
couple of weeks counts as hindsight?
Fucking A, Stu.
I got nothing for you.
Come on. Look, I'm just asking you a simple question. You don't have to candy coat it like you're gonna hurt my feelings, but did you see this coming?
Well, with the exception of my dog, I haven't slept next to the same person for more than 2 or 3 days in a row, so I don't know what I'm gonna say that's gonna be relevant to your situation.
I opened a restaurant for you, asshole.
No, you opened a restaurant for you, asshole. According to the Village Voice, it's a bar with uninspired food.
Whatever, look. I'm simply asking for my best friend's opinion, even if it is an uninformed piece of crap.
Okay. We are young. Heartache to heartache, we stand. No promises, no demands. Love is a battlefield. Got Benatar.
You're a fucking idiot.
Stu clenches his jaw while Connor eats.
Look, I feel like I walk on eggshells around you. I tried to talk to you about this for months.
I'm not talking about that.
This is what I'm talking about, man. I don't know how to be your friend anymore. You're no fucking picnic.
With his arms crossed, Connor glares at his friend, then sips his coffee.
Look, I saw her the other day.
You what?
I saw her.
Where?
Astor Place.
Connor stares wide-eyed.
You talk to her?
No.
Nope. Didn't talk to
her? No, she was far away. She was walking away. She was going to class or something.
Class?
Yeah, she had her book bags with her or something. She was
what
going
school?
To class.
Like what, NYU or Cooper Union or?
I don't know.
New school?
I don't know. It's not hard to find out.
Why didn't you tell me?
I just did.
What are you guys talking about?
You.
Now, Connor stands against a tree. In shades and a dark t-shirt, he sips from a paper coffee cup and looks around. His eyebrows rise as he notices Elle exiting a coffee store across the street. He starts to match her speed, walking down a park path parallel to her. She smokes a cigarette. As she crosses the street, he makes his way to her sidewalk, trailing her at a distance. He follows her past chained bicycles and a pizzeria. She jogs to cross with a group of pedestrians. Connor keeps his eyes on her. She crosses the street with a crowd. Outside a subway entrance, Elle flicks her cigarette to the ground and stubs it out with her shoe before descending the stairs. Connor follows close behind, but he stops at the top of the stairs. He wavers for a moment, then walks back in the direction he came. At night, Connor lies in a darkened bedroom, a newspaper resting on his stomach. He stirs with an annoyed expression. He throws off the newspaper and rises. In the living room, his father sits reading by the stereo. Connor turns down the volume.
I'm not here to approve or disapprove, just so you know. Your mother always gave me crap for never stepping up to the plate.
Okay, what?
She said I never stepped up.
I'm sorry, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, you're a bit like me.
No, I'm fucking not. I stepped up.
He approaches his father.
Okay. So what else?
Nothing. Nothing. We don't have to keep talking.
Yeah, but you're the one who came into the room.
Yeah, to turn down your stupid music.
No. Every day, I do one thing that makes me happy. What? One thing, and that is either listening to my stupid music or reading the stupid paper. And that's the best way I've found to deal with myself. So just go back to the guest room and count the fucking raindrops.
Count the fucking raindrops?
Oh, I was never very good at this kind of thing.
The father sets down his glass. He holds his face in his hands.
Okay. It isn't your job to investigate the expansive memory that's called the past and judge what is right and what isn't.
Seriously, what the fuck are you talking about?
He raises his eyebrows at his son.
You shouldn't be interested in regretting things.
I'm not.
Daytime. Elle waits at a crosswalk before continuing down the sidewalk. Our view follows her. Connor runs his hands through his hair, an intense expression on his face. He passes by the same pizzeria as the last time he followed Elle. He watches her enter the glass and metal Cooper Union building. Inside, he finds a lecture hall where students file in. He slumps into a seat near the back while Elle sits four rows closer to Professor Friedman.
Let's do this. Intuitive answer to this question. At the bottom, the sense of self corresponds to that experience of ownership and impenetrability of one's thoughts, of one's internal dialogues, of one's affective states.
Connor taps a student's shoulder.
That many but not all of us have from infancy.
Can I borrow a piece of paper and a pen?
This mental solitude is held as constituting the basis of our...
With an annoyed look, the student tears out a sheet of paper.
Of identification, of demarcation from others.
He pulls a pen from his shirt pocket.
Perhaps that very same solitude that Descartes had in mind when he redefined the concepts of subject and subjectivity.
Connor writes the word "hi," then folds the paper in quarters and writes "L."
The faculty of knowing lies within the subject, in his head, and the subject has such a status by dint of being enclosed within himself.
He leans close to the student in front of him.
And distinct from the world and from others.
Would you mind passing this to the girl with the red hair?
The student scoffs.
Come on, please.
Connor smiles, and the student reluctantly takes the note.
Thanks a lot. Don't forget your pen.
The bespectacled student taps the dark-haired girl on the shoulder. She turns, and Connor catches her eye.
And again, Doesn't common sense tell us that strange behavior...
With an annoyed look, she passes the note to a bearded student in front of her. Connor gives him a smile, and he passes it to Elle. Connor waits with raised eyebrows while she reads it.
Boy, I'm learning something. Why the mind is in the head is the title of...
Elle turns to the bearded student who points behind him. Connor waves.
Symposium.
Elle stares at him with a furrowed brow, then faces front. Connor licks his lips, a questioning look on his face.
Can we compellingly reinscribe what it is to be a person...
Elle crumples the note and walks out of the lecture hall. On a sidewalk, Connor catches up to her.
The relational.
Hey! Hey, Rigby.
What the fuck are you doing?
Well, come on, I barely got a chance to respond before you went AWOL.
What did I ask you, Connor?
Just give me a second to talk.
What the fuck did I ask you?
Please, just give me a goddamn second to
talk. I gave you plenty of seconds! Do me a favor, leave me the fuck alone!
She jogs across the street.
Fine. Fine, you do what you gotta do. You just keep fucking walking.
A taxi slams Connor to the pavement.
Connor? Oh, shit. Connor?
You know this guy?
He's my husband.
At night, the couple sits on a curb.
Well, that was exciting.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Connor wears a bandage on his right temple. They stare ahead with blank expressions.
So, you're back in school?
I'm taking some classes.
He purses his lips and knits his brow.
I almost didn't recognize you.
What do you mean?
It's just your hair.
She touches her hair.
It's really pretty.
Elle looks away from him, smoothing it behind her ear.
Where are you living, Elle?
None of your business. Is that what you so desperately needed to talk to me about?
No.
What is it, then?
Connor closes his eyes and shakes his head.
I was gonna say something good. Something that would have solved all our problems and made everything all better, but you know what? I forgot what it was.
Elle lifts her chin from her palm and parts her lips.
That's too bad.
Isn't it?
Connor stares at his wife, who doesn't meet his gaze.
I'm gonna go.
All I want is a chance to just talk it out. And after that, you can disappear. It's wherever it is you disappear to.
You ready, sir?
A paramedic touches Connor's shoulder, and Elle nods.
Yeah, I was born ready. Nice. Yeah.
Watch this stuff.
Two paramedics escort Connor away.
I'll see you around.
They load him into an ambulance.
All right, watch your head coming up.
Got him?
I got him.
What?
I take it easy.
With a pained expression, he sits on a stretcher.
Try one for me?
Okay.
He looks through the ambulance doors at Elle.
Can I keep stalking you?
She tilts her head with a somber expression. Connor waves at his wife through the ambulance's rear window before it drives away. Daytime. The young boy pushes Elle's eye open.
Are you awake? Andy, are you awake?
No, Philip.
Your eyes are open.
Apparently.
Why do you have your shoes on in bed?
Lying with her head on a pillow, a smile creeps across Elle's face. She ruffles Philip's hair.
Morning sunshine.
Mary watches from the doorway.
Mom's making French toast.
I'll be right down.
Okay.
Philip trots out of the room, carrying a stuffed animal under one arm. Elle lies still for a moment, then rises to sit on the edge of the bed. Wearing the same dress from the night before, she smooths her hair. She casts her eyes downward, a thoughtful frown on her face. With a resigned look, she rises and catches her reflection in a mirror hanging on the wall. She touches her face and hair, then flips the mirror to face the wall. She shuts the door. Now in the kitchen.
Came in late last night.
Elle takes a mug of coffee and gives her mother an aloof look.
What's with the feast?
We have a special guest star. Outside.
Elle glances between her blonde sister and Mary, then walks to the back door. On the patio, her father chats with another bearded man. They both notice her.
Good morning.
She shakes her head, then marches into the kitchen.
No fucking way. Elle.
Now, Elle sits with her sister in the sunroom, her arms folded.
You sandbagged me.
Julian enters.
He chairs the psychology department.
Good for him.
Well, I just thought he'd be a bit more qualified to deal with your circumstance.
What's my circumstance?
Julian stares at his daughter with his lips parted. He looks to Elle's blonde sister. She stands up, patting her father's shoulder as she leaves the room.
He was my grandson. I lost him too.
Elle meets her father's gaze, then looks down. Slowly, Julian moves to the love seat beside his daughter. He sits and shakes his head.
None of us know how to help you.
Well, neither do I. I'm so glad they delegated the speech to you.
He's not a stranger that some hospital referred you to. He's a colleague of mine. I don't think one session a week would hurt.
Why can't you talk to me once a week, Dad? Why outsource it?
I'm not outsourcing it, and I don't really think you want to talk to me about it.
I don't need to talk to another therapist.
Eleanor.
Please, stop reminding me that something's wrong.
That's not my intention.
Then please let me stop thinking about it.
Julian hangs his head. Elle stands up and wipes her eye.
Tragedy is a foreign country. We don't know how to talk to the natives.
What are you talking about?
He gives a slight nod, then looks away. Elle walks out of the room, leaving her father staring out a window. Now, she sits on the floor of the school hallway. With a textbook in her lap, she scribbles in her notebook and chews on a pen cap. Professor Friedman sits beside her.
You know, there's this really cool thing called chairs.
Yeah, I heard about those.
It's actually not too shabby down here.
She turns to Elle with a smile.
You okay?
Sure.
Liar.
Sure.
When's your next class?
It's yours.
The professor's shoulders slump wearily.
Oh. You like hamburgers.
Now they eat in a restaurant.
I used to be vegan. Mostly because my husband was a vegan. Not that I don't agree with most of the tenets of vegan ideology, but he's one of those reformed socialists who seemed sexy before the 60s started to fade.
Does he teach?
He won tenure at University of Oregon. I got it here. He went soft, I stayed hard. That was that.
Elle smiles over her french fries.
You have kids?
A son. I'm not sure why people have kids. And first is the 9 months of agony.
Your body hurts, it's hot, it's cold, you crave pickles, and there's no words to describe whatever fuck labor is. And this little stranger comes out sucking every bit of life you have left in you, and as soon as you're ready to jump out of a window, all of a sudden he smiles.
Elle looks down with a tight grin.
Jesus Christ, this is good. And whatever you do, however you do it, however you imagine your child's life or what kind of parent you'd be, 29 years later, he's in some shrink's office accusing you of some stupid thing that you said or did that for the life of you, you can't remember saying or doing.
Elle chews with a thoughtful stare.
Tell me at your age, you're not taking classes out of boredom.
I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
What was before this?
Life in general.
Any kids? Boy or girl?
Boy.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Who was that man who chased you out of my classroom the other day?
She looks down for a moment, then drops her fry.
He went soft. I stayed hard. That was that.
At his restaurant, Connor does paperwork. Stu hits him.
Well, it's been real, everybody.
No, it hasn't.
Hey. God damn it.
Slow night.
A couple of people came in and used the bathroom.
How are we doing?
Well, aside from being an endangered species, not so good.
Could you translate that for me, please?
Friday night, that's the only night we're making any money. I have missed some bills, and we can't cover the overhead.
I see.
Yeah. You got a plan B?
Burger King?
Seriously, come on, I want to show you something. This is the spreadsheet from the
hospital. No, I can't.
Stu indicates a woman behind him.
Oh.
Connor stands from his table.
You got protection?
Shh.
Viagra?
Please, be quiet.
You want me to hold
Shut your mouth.
Want to watch?
Shut up. Dude, I'm being serious. Shut up. I believe.
In what?
A higher power. Can you hear it?
Not right now.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.
You guys have fun.
Grinning, Connor takes off his glasses and rubs his eyes. The bartender grabs a glass and drinks from it.
You know, I got a plan B.
Yeah? You know what? You can get out of here.
I was thinking about getting my real estate license.
What?
Mm-hmm.
She joins him at a long booth.
Why would you do something like that?
Because it seems more impressive than pouring drinks.
Does it? What happened to your life in the arts?
Oh, that'll probably phase into a Sunday afternoon hobby kind of thing.
You?
She nods.
Plus, I think it's kind of indecent to have things so worked out that they wind up exactly like you thought they would.
She grins at Connor and tilts her head. He looks away.
Are you gonna be okay?
He drops a pen on the table, then leans back against the booth.
Probably.
We live in a world full of probablys. Well, I'm a decent listener. If you ever want to talk about, you know, whatever.
Talking about whatever is overrated, I prefer just to, you know, let things stew inside of me and then have a violent out.
She kisses Connor. She pulls back, keeping her face close to his.
What'd you do that for?
It just seemed like the next interesting thing to do.
I'm kind of married.
Yeah, I don't mind.
I kind of do.
There's nobody looking.
You know, in another life,
The bartender kisses him again. She wraps her arms around his neck. Connor leans over her, reciprocating.
I shouldn't do this.
She climbs onto his lap.
When's the last time that you got laid properly?
They kiss, and he dips her to the side.
Oh, fuck. I can already taste the regret.
Well, stop thinking because it's not healthy for you.
Alexis?
Yes?
Tomorrow's gonna be awkward.
Probably.
Alexis wraps her arms around him, and he leans into the kiss. Later, Connor sits slumped in the corner of the long booth. With a dazed expression, he stares at a bottle of wine on the table. Connor kicks it over. Daytime. Connor walks to the bustling subway entrance. He hesitates at the top of the stairs and looks to the tunnel below. As he descends the subway steps, Connor's figure blurs into the darkness. At a station, Connor waits as a train pulls in, obscuring him from view. The passing windows reveal his waiting form. Now, a cab pulls in front of Julian and Mary's large two-story house. Connor hands the driver his fee, then exits the cab. As he hesitates on the steps of the front walk, Connor puts a hand to his face, then continues to the house. He trots up the porch steps to the front door. Mary opens the door.
Oh.
She shuts it, leaving him outside.
I'm sorry. I wasn't expecting you.
No. I wasn't expecting me either. So.
Hi.
Hey. Is she here?
Mary stares, then shakes her head.
No.
Is she living here?
She grins hesitantly.
Do you want to come in for a second?
Would that be all right?
Yeah, come in.
In a sitting room, Mary drinks wine.
Can I ask how she's doing?
I don't know, to be completely honest.
She shrugs.
As good as she can be.
Connor sets a glass of water on the coffee table between them. He turns, noticing a gap in a collection of framed photographs lining the staircase wall. Elle's mother follows his gaze, then looks at him with a faint smile.
Do I seem like a different person to you?
Do you feel like a different person?
I kinda.
You look the same to me. You know I didn't like you when Eleanor first brought you out here for dinner. However long ago it was. How long ago was it?
7 years.
7 years?
Yeah.
He gives a weak grin, then gazes down.
You sat there in the exact same spot 7 years ago, with a glass of water because you were afraid to have a drink in front of me. This obnoxiously perfect kid who walked off with my daughter's attention. You grew on me, though.
Oh, wow.
It's true.
Elle's mother gazes distantly.
Look, I don't want to interfere with your life or whatever she has to do. But I can't just chalk this up to destiny. I walked on with my life because moving forward was the only way to go.
I guess people grieve differently.
I wish there was some appropriate, articulate thing to say, but I just wanted the mundane daily bullshit back.
I think Eleanor wanted something else. And I think that there was nothing appropriate about any of this.
Viewed through a passing train's windows, Connor stands at the station. He takes off his sunglasses and cleans them. The train passes to reveal the opposite side of the track, where a sign reads, Westport. Elle fidgets with her purse as she walks past. At her parents' house, Elle closes her bedroom door. She grabs a pillow and settles into it, lying perpendicular across the bed. Elle's sister enters. She crouches at the foot of the bed and peeks through its frame. Elle reaches out her palm and they high five. In another bedroom, the blonde stands with a dress bunched up around her waist.
I feel fat.
Katie, shut up.
Elle pulls the dress down over Katie's hips.
You're not fat.
Katie studies herself in a mirror and straightens her posture. As Elle rifles through a closet, she notices a framed photo tucked away on an upper shelf. She stares, then looks away. Elle grabs a dress and holds the floral print up to Katie. She rests her head on the blonde shoulder as they study the reflection.
That's gorgeous.
God damn it!
Excuse me? Hey, come in here.
Philip enters the room with a toy.
What was that?
This keeps breaking off.
Okay, but we don't say that, lovey.
Why?
Because it's not a nice thing to say.
To Elle.
Are you sure that you're okay to watch him? Mom and Dad should be back pretty soon. He's here. Are you? You sure?
Yes, I'm positive.
Which, change.
Yeah.
Elle unzips Katie's dress. At night, Elle smiles as Philip drinks milk and it dribbles down his chin.
So what do you want to do?
She wipes his face.
What do you want to do?
Outside, they walk through a dark yard.
Can I get electrocuted by lightning bugs?
No, they're harmless.
Elle kisses the boy's head and ruffles his hair. Holding a jar, he walks off. Elle takes a seat on the grass. Fireflies blink around her as she stares off. In a car, Elle lies shirtless on top of Connor. With her long hair tied back in a braid, she rests her head on his shoulder.
This song is horrible.
It's not good.
I think that bad music turns you on.
She sits up.
Seriously? Whoa, car. Oh, do the thing.
The seat falls back and Elle huddles on top of him.
I don't want to see your tatas.
Holding a bra, Elle looks up.
We're good.
Help me.
What? You know what you're doing?
Elle slips into her bra.
Stupid.
Here you go. Should I do it?
Yeah.
Okay. This is kind of counterintuitive.
He reaches around her.
I think I'm instinctually wired not to be able to do this.
Connor fidgets with the clasp.
There we go. 3, 2, 1. Just like that. You look good.
Very impressed.
Elle adjusts her bra.
We have to listen to this.
She shoots Connor a look, then turns to the side. Elle pops a licorice stick into her mouth, and he bites the end hanging from her lips.
Hey!
You want it? You want it?
Top 40?
No.
Country?
No.
Elle steals back the licorice and eats it.
Can I have some?
Thank God.
Baby?
Mm-hmm.
As comfortable as this is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm losing circulation in my legs.
What are you trying to say?
That you're fat. And I love every pound of you.
Whoa!
Come here.
As they kiss, Elle transfers a piece of licorice, then climbs off of him.
Sure, my shirt went.
Tie the back seat.
Connor reclines his seat and adjusts his pants. He turns to the back of the car.
Where are you going?
Out here.
Connor furrows his brow. He puts on his shirt as Elle stands in front of the car and wiggles her finger.
You coming?
She climbs onto the hood.
Yeah.
Wearing only her bra and a skirt, Elle lounges on the front windshield. Connor gets out of the car and joins her. They share a deep kiss.
Where are we?
Someplace good.
Elle beams and Connor leans close to her face. He lingers with his parted lips close to Elle's, then kisses her. Connor pulls back and away as Elle watches with a grin. Connor avoids Elle's playful kicks, then pulls her off of the car. He spins her. The couple dances in the car's headlights. Connor grinds up against Elle, then grabs her hand and twirls. They spin simultaneously under their bridged arms, and Connor pulls Elle close to swing her around. Connor flings Elle over his shoulder and jogs into the night as fireflies blink around them. In a bedroom at her parents' house, Elle lies next to the sleeping boy. A firefly flickers in a jar on a nightstand. Elle stirs. She covers her mouth as she yawns. Katie creeps to the bed and carefully takes a seat near Elle's feet. As the blonde grins, she puts a hand under her own chin. Elle looks up at her.
It went that badly. I could have given him a normal kiss goodnight instead of jamming my tongue down his throat.
Katie puts a finger to her lip, then shrugs. She clasps a hand over her mouth, and Elle touches her arm. Katie slumps to the floor.
You have a little to drink tonight?
Yeah.
Elle turns onto her side to face Katie. The blonde notices the jar containing the firefly.
What's that? Philip gave it to me so I won't be afraid of the dark.
Elle sits up.
You're still having trouble with that? Yeah, guess so. Come on.
She helps Katie off of the floor, then leads her out of the room. Elle closes the door.
Oh, I don't mean... That's not why I was... I just... I'm okay. Is it okay to be okay?
Yeah.
Be okay all you want.
In the connecting bedroom, Elle leans against the closed door. Katie takes a seat on the bed and looks at her.
Are you really okay?
I can pretend.
Elle grins, then looks down as her smile fades. On the bed, Katie hugs a pillow to her chest and moves over to make room for Elle. The slender woman sets a pillow at the foot of the bed and sits leaning against the frame opposite Katie.
All of a sudden, I kind of miss him.
She stares distantly.
Who?
Connor.
With a downward gaze, Katie leans closer to Elle.
He came by the house the other day. He talked with Mom, and she told me not to tell you.
Katie settles back against the headboard. Closing her eyes, Elle leans her head against the bed frame.
I'm sorry, Katie.
What for?
I feel like I just dropped in on you guys and I sucked all the air out of the room.
You are kind of a selfish bitch.
Hey, you don't have to be so honest.
No.
Elle lies next to Katie.
I was really mad at you.
I know.
I'm still really mad at you.
I know.
Hugging Katie's arm, Elle rests her head against the blonde shoulder.
And you pulled the floorboards out from under Connor.
He threw Cody's stuff into the closet. And then 10 minutes later, he ordered Chinese from Madame Wu's. I tried for 6 months. We were a million miles away in the same room, and I started to think thoughts I never thought I'd have.
Daytime. On an outdoor train platform, Elle sits cross-legged on a bench next to her father, who writes. Wearing sunglasses, she looks up from her book and turns to the older man.
How have you and Mom made it this far?
I'm not sure. Endurance? Everyone starts out thinking this is forever. Then things get hard at some point or another. And then other things don't pan out the way you thought they would.
Elle looks down. Julian gazes off.
I suppose the trick is not running for the hills even when you think it's the most rational thing to do.
The slender woman looks at her father, then turns back to her book. The older man shakes his head.
I don't know.
In the empty lecture hall, Elle sets her bag down and takes a seat.
I hate this room.
I've seen worse.
Professor Friedman slumps down in the seat next to Elle.
Where?
Huh?
Where have you seen worse?
NYU, Yale.
Oh, Yale's butt ugly.
New Haven's butt ugly.
Elle writes in a book.
Did you attend any of those fine institutions?
NYU. And then I grew up at Yale when my dad was there.
Oh, of course. You're a faculty brat.
Mm-hmm.
You and my son would get along like hotcakes. Not that I'm trying to set you up or anything. He lives in Washington, the state. He's been pretending to write a novel there for the last 4 years.
Other students enter the lecture hall.
Learn anything interesting at NYU?
I abandoned a dissertation.
Bold. What department?
Anthropology.
Social linguistic?
I was writing an ethnography on the social world of performance artists in Paris. Musicians, dancers, actors, etc.
Why?
I don't know. My mom is a musician and she's French, so...
No. I mean, why did you abandon it? Don't tell me something stupid like love.
Elle grins and shakes her head softly.
You're very talkative.
It's more fun listening to you.
You'll get over that.
I got pregnant.
The professor meets Elle's gaze.
Not that.
Elle nods. At dawn, Elle lies in bed at her parents' house, gazing at the firefly in the jar. She grabs it from the bedside table and stares into the glass. Now, Elle steps out of a car. Dressed in a sports bra and loose tank top, she walks through a dim field. Elle opens the lid on the firefly jar and gently shakes the glass.
Mom, wake up.
She turns the jar over in her hands. Elle looks in and taps the bottom of the glass.
Wake up.
Elle watches as the firefly blinks and flies away. Lowering the jar, Elle stares after the insect. She closes her eyes briefly and brushes her hair away from her face. Elle parks in the driveway.
Mais qu'est-ce que t'as foutu?
What?
I went into your room to check about you and you were gone and the car was gone.
Yeah, I went for a drive.
Well, don't ever do it again.
Why were you checking on me?
I've always checked on you.
Mary sits on the steps by the back door and takes a drag from her cigarette. She holds a glass of wine.
You feeling a bit dramatic today?
No. Why?
Elle gives a slight nod and pats her mother's shoulder as she enters the house. Mary follows her inside. She sits at a table in the sunroom.
I played second violin on this.
Boston Symphony, Zach Perlman. I haven't forgotten.
No, I was just reminding myself.
Mary shrugs. Elle gives a gentle nod. The elegant older woman takes a sip of wine. On the table in front of her sit toy trees and dinosaurs. Mary plays with two of the dinosaurs. Elle takes a seat across from her.
What?
Elle pulls one of the dinosaurs from her mother's hand. She cocks her head at the older woman.
I never wanted to be a mother.
Not much you can do about that now.
Yeah, it's too late. I was too young when I had you. I was the baby.
Why are you telling me this?
I'm telling you this because I don't want to lie to you. I don't want you to take our relationship too personally.
I don't.
Elle furrows her brow. As Mary reaches for her wine glass, Elle takes it from her.
No, give me my wine. Give me my wine.
Why didn't you tell me Connor came by the house the other day?
Run for your life, Elle.
What is that supposed to mean?
Well, this is all too realistic. Run away for a while.
You sure you're not projecting?
Yes, I'm sure I'm not projecting. You liked your semester in Paris, so why don't you go back there and finish your dissertation? You could write in cafes, read Le Monde, Elisa Roque, eat bread, make eyes at strangers.
Elle smiles, nodding faintly.
Yeah, I could.
She looks down.
So why are you still here?
Now, in the kitchen of Connor's restaurant.
I don't get it, man.
What don't you get?
Well, your dad is like a culinary maverick. He's like the Mick Jagger of the restaurant game. All you gotta do is make one phone call and it saves our asses, but instead, you want us to drown like 90% of the other restaurants in the city. I don't
Stu,
get it.
Stu.
Well, what did he do?
What do you mean, what did he do?
Your dad. What did he do? I mean, at least take a page out of his book. What did he do?
He married my mom.
What does that mean?
It means he married my mom. She gave him all the money that her family left her, and he opened the restaurant. It was a big success, and then he dropped it like a bad habit. So, you know what? Why don't you go and find yourself some lonely, loaded old lady, and then we can take it from there.
Well,
you know what? I'd rather fail catastrophically than, you know, give him the satisfaction of thinking he handed me my life in a platter.
That is the stupidest thing in the history of stupid things.
Why is that stupid? Why is that stupid? You know what's stupid? You think I'm going to call my dad and he's going to go like, hey, son, yeah, why don't you come and bring your friends and they can work here too?
Yeah. It's not a fucking slumber party. It's not a slumber party. It's a job.
Stu, as decent a cook as you are.
I'm a chef.
All right, chef. You don't exactly cut it in those kitchens.
Oh, relax.
No.
You don't want to have this conversation.
You know, no, let's
you
talk.
You don't
want
to have this conversation.
When's the last time you julienned a carrot?
All right.
Seriously.
You really want to have this
when's
conversation?
When's the last time you cooked an egg and you didn't
really
blanch the yolk? You know, in those
really
kind of kitchens,
I've been pulling
world,
my weight. Fine.
You would be.
You're the one.
A busboy.
You fuckhead.
Yeah, no,
fucking
I'm
failure.
You, man.
You know
yeah,
what?
The stupid ass is out there
son.
And he's up. You go, big fuck you.
Stu throws greens at Connor.
Like, there. Whoa. You hit me with fucking kale?
He throws a punch.
That all you got?
Come on.
They wrestle to the floor.
Jeez, ow! 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 Yeah. Ow! Ow! Oh! Yeah. Ah! Okay. Yeah, this is what you want?
At the bar, Alexis listens with another girl.
Is that a joke?
No, I think they're really going at it.
Elle enters.
We're not quite open yet.
In the kitchen, Stu lies panting.
I stirred in my class. The New York Academy of Culinary Arts, you fuckhead.
I know that asshole.
Stu struggles to sit up.
Hey, I love our little setup here. I do. Just the lease has gotten prohibitively expensive, and unless you want to camp out in the kitchen.
Yeah. I'll bring the sleeping bags.
Just time to let go. Time to grow up.
I am grown up. I am.
Right?
Connor looks at the floor and grins.
When do we call it quits?
End of next week.
Stu grimaces, then deflates.
Can we have one last banger before we close shop?
Yeah.
Connor raises his brow.
Can we abuse some heavy narcotics?
Whatever tickles your thing.
Good. I'm sorry.
Blow me.
Okay.
They shake hands. With a slap to Stu's hip, Connor pulls himself to his feet. As he turns a corner, he spots Elle chatting at the bar. He steps back into the kitchen and spies on her from
okay.
the doorway.
Good. Yeah. Just a painting. Here.
Stu steps out and Connor tries to stop him.
Sorry.
Stu spots Elle.
Holy Shatner.
Nice to see you too, Stuart.
Connor claps his friend on the shoulders.
Well, this is nice. Like old times, reconnecting and all. I'm gonna go to the kitchen.
Yeah.
I will join you.
Stu and Alexis file out of the bar, leaving the husband and wife alone. Connor clasps his hands behind his back and takes a deep, nervous breath. Elle smiles and shifts on her bar stool. He steps behind the bar and stares into her eyes. He smiles.
Shirley Temple?
Please.
He takes a glass and sets it in front of her, dropping in a handful of ice. He pops open a can.
What do I owe you?
Your money's no good here, you know that.
She brushes her hair from her face as he prepares the drink.
Business is good.
It's great.
She smiles at him.
We're closing.
Her face drops.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
She takes a slow sip of the Shirley Temple.
So what's next?
I don't know. I thought I might develop some interests in things that people actually take an interest in.
You gonna work with your dad?
He grins and shakes his head.
You know, before you, I had no idea who I was. And when we were together, I thought I had it all figured out. Now, I'm just back to wondering again.
Well, when you figure it out, tell me how. Okay?
With glistening eyes, he gives her a sad smile.
Let's get out of here.
What?
Let's go.
Right now?
Yeah, that's the idea.
He glances toward the kitchen.
Okay. Yeah.
Looking back nervously, he follows her outside. Now they walk around the front of a car.
Don't forget to fill it up before you drop it off.
You got it.
Connor opens the passenger door for his wife, then goes to the driver's seat. As they drive down the highway, he hands Elle a plastic drink cup. She pulls licorice from a package on the dashboard and gives it to him. He takes a bite and she presses a button on the radio. She turns up the volume and they sit staring out the windshield. Connor taps the steering wheel. He switches off the radio.
Jen.
What are you doing?
Do you want to listen to that?
Yeah. Suck it up, Lizzo.
She turns the music up, flicking her soda cup in time with the rhythm. Her husband smiles at her. Later.
Is it gonna rain?
In the car, Elle watches Connor in the rain trying to fix a windshield wiper. He slams it to the glass and climbs back inside.
Fuck me!
Of course we get the car with the retarded wipers.
We could just wait it out.
She grins at him, but he shakes his head.
What are we doing here?
You tell me. You're the one who said that we needed to talk. You stalked me. You went to my parents' house. What are we doing here?
Just recently, like an hour ago, you walked into my bar and you suggested we drive aimlessly in a perfect fucking storm here.
She raises her eyebrows and smiles.
This is funny.
Yeah. It's fucking hilarious.
Grinning, they glance back and forth between each other and the rain outside. Connor stares straight ahead.
You know, for a while there, I thought we'd actually piece together a pretty decent life.
Elle gives a faint nod, and her smile fades.
I have to move everything out of the apartment next week. You want me to keep anything for you?
Where will you move to?
I don't know. I can stay with my dad for a little while, till I get things figured out.
How is he?
Oh, I'm pretty certain he's losing his mind. Fernanda left him.
Oh.
He's getting all talkative. Waxing philosophical. Same shit he pulls every time he's between significant others.
I think it's probably more than that.
Yeah, maybe.
At least you guys are talking.
Yeah. Why don't you tell your parents about us?
What would I say?
That we're fabulous.
She shoots her husband a wry grin, then glances outside.
I feel like we're living some dreadful disaster cliche.
We are.
Connor looks up with a smile, then meets his wife's gaze.
You're sopping wet.
Oh, you noticed. Thank you.
She runs her hands down his face and over his shoulder. He leans in to kiss her. The headlights of a passing car shine on them as they embrace. She lies back and he climbs on top of her. Elle starts to unbutton Connor's shirt.
Wait.
No, no, no.
No, wait, wait. Just a second, wait.
Shh, shh, shh.
She runs her hand down his neck and over his bare chest.
I slept with someone else.
She stares up at him, motionless.
I'm sorry.
She squirms slightly, her head tilting to the side.
It doesn't matter.
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
Get off me.
Don't. Elle, come on.
Get off!
What do you mean it doesn't matter?
Get over yourself, Connor.
She lifts her seat back up and looks away.
You don't care?
No.
That's bullshit. I know you care. Elle, you're supposed to say, what the fuck were you thinking, Connor? You're supposed to say you're a selfish piece of shit.
No. We're past that. And you just said it for me. Come on, let's go back to the city.
She casually brushes her hair behind her ear as her husband glares at her. He settles into his seat and starts buttoning his shirt. Their rental car pulls to a stop at a curb, the windshield wipers battling the rain. They sit staring straight ahead.
I'm gonna get out of here.
Connor watches Elle walk away. She marches along the sidewalk to a subway entrance, her arms straight at her sides. Reaching the bottom of the stairs, she stops and leans against a wall, standing motionless. She continues into the subway. In a library, Elle wears a white t-shirt and walks through the book stacks. She finds her sister flipping through a magazine with her back turned. Elle sneaks up behind her.
Ma'am?
Yes.
What a dick.
Elle steps away, playing with her sunglasses.
You look like ass.
Thank you. Where were you last night?
Elle shrugs with her eyes cast down. Katie knits her brow.
Do you want to take a load off?
Elle nods sincerely, and Katie leads her into a hallway.
I come here on breaks. One of the librarians advocates a whole nap philosophy.
Nap philosophy?
Yeah. Well, naps throughout the day, like, help with productivity and stuff. If you want to read this.
Katie sets a magazine beside her, then stands. Elle grabs her arm.
What?
The redhead stares at the floor thoughtfully.
I was hoping you could read my mind. Wouldn't that be nice?
Katie cocks her head. Elle takes her arm and pulls her close, leaning her head on the blonde woman's shoulder.
You want to do something stupid this weekend?
Yeah. I'm the queen of doing something stupid.
What are you thinking? Get pinned, take a train to the city, save the world.
When did you become an idealist?
A couple seconds ago.
I have a date with the dentist this weekend.
It's okay, you can be your third wheel.
Katie nods, grinning. Now, the sisters walk with a man into a dance club.
Do you like drinks?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have a drink.
Should we get, like...
Shot?
Three shots?
Tequila. Round of tequila.
Katie leads Elle through the dancing crowd, bobbing her shoulders to the music. They make their way to the dance floor, and Elle crosses in front of her sister. As they start dancing, she glances with a grin at the people surrounding them. The man returns with the shots.
Cheers.
Elle downs hers immediately. Now, Elle and Katie dance with abandon. The redhead waves her arms over her head, then pulls her sister into a hug as they bounce to the music. Elle pushes away and does a twirl while Katie leans back, pumping her shoulders. A dark-haired man approaches Elle from behind and starts dancing with her. She gives Katie a wide-eyed, open-mouthed grin.
Hey, what's your name?
I'm good, thanks!
Katie leans in to whisper something into Elle's ear.
Wait!
The redhead grabs the man by the shirt collar, not looking at him as she continues to dance. She downs the rest of her drink. Katie waves a hand at her, looking impressed. Elle turns around and pulls the stranger into a deep, passionate kiss. Katie stops dancing, her face falling as she watches. Now locked in an embrace, Elle and the dark-haired man stumble through his apartment door. He starts lifting her shirt as they make their way inside. At the sofa, they both pull their shirts off. She turns around as he undoes her pants from behind, kissing her neck and back. Her expression grows uneasy.
Wait. No! Wait, wait, wait!
What? What? What is it?
Yeah.
Did I hear you?
No.
What is it?
You're a stranger.
So are you.
You ever have that moment when you know you're doing something stupid, but you do it anyway?
Day.
He approaches, but she shakes her head.
No.
Come on.
Stay there. I'm gonna go.
No.
She starts to put on her shirt, and he advances again.
Don't.
Oh, Jesus. Just stay for a minute.
She moves to the door.
Really?
She pushes him away as she pulls her shirt on, then steps out.
Sorry.
Now Elle walks on the wet sidewalk. Soaked with rain, her mascara runs down her cheekbones. She turns her head to look down the street. Spotting a taxi, she waves. The cab pulls up to the curb and she gets in.
Where to?
Just make a loop around the city.
Got a destination?
Eventually.
The slender young woman stares out the window as the cab pulls away. Fade to black. In another part of the city, Connor crosses the street. The sign above a door reads, Anna. Inside, a dark-haired girl at a podium looks over the reservations book.
Hey, Phoebe.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Your hair got long.
Not really.
Yeah.
He's in a spot.
Connor heads to the bar. His father writes in a notebook. Connor grabs a glass, then reaches past him for a bottle. He pulls out the cork. The well-dressed man doesn't look up. Connor drinks.
You could make this place your own if you want. Do what you like with it.
Seriously,
I'm done. Used to be pretty cool once upon a time. Some of the same faces still show up, except more wrinkled. Some of them less so. Stones were in last week after playing the garden, but mostly people are just fading away. I've been doing this way too long.
I think you've done pretty good.
Yeah, well, complacency scares the shit out of me.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. And how's this? I forfeited the loan the bank gave me. I'm losing the lease on my bar. Eleanor's gone. With the fucking wind. I'm 33 years old. And my life's a fucking boat wreck.
I'm in my 60s. I lost a grandson this year, but I'm basically forbidden to talk about it. My third wife just walked out of me, and I come here every afternoon to this restaurant named after your mother.
He flashes Connor a knowing look, then averts his gaze.
It's time to ship the crow.
Where are you gonna go? You gonna fly off to Never Never Land? Become a Buddhist?
What are you doing here, anyway?
I was just in the neighborhood.
The well-dressed man nods, pursing his lips.
Just in the neighborhood.
He turns to Connor.
What is it?
With soft eyes, the scruffy young man stares at his father.
Do you ever wonder why we fall in love with a specific person?
Not really. I think to myself, something's wrong here, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is.
Shaking his head, Connor smiles.
There's always one that haunts us. So give it time. That's the right thing to do, given the circumstances.
Circumstances suck.
Yeah.
Tears glistening in his eyes, Connor takes a swig from his drink. His father stares off.
I really forbid you from talking about him?
Uh-huh.
Connor's father takes a slow sip from his drink.
What the fuck are you gonna say to me?
Out of the corner of his eye, the well-dressed man glances at his son. Connor shakes his head.
Ever since he... Ever since what happened, any thought or memory of him has been something just to run my mind as far as fuck away from as I can get, and it echoes.
The well-dressed man leans in close to his son.
A shooting star only lasts a second. But aren't you glad to exist, Lucia?
Connor works his jaw.
It's nice.
little hallmark, but it's nice. I mean it, it's nice. You have a delicate soul, Dad.
Oh, nobody ever said that to me before.
You know, we're in imminent danger of sappiness.
Oh, we can't have that, can we? Henry?
Yeah.
I'll fix you something up.
Okay.
The father rises from his seat, leaving Connor to stare at the bottles lining the shelves behind the bar. Now, Al sits on the floor outside Professor Friedman's office. A man exits, with the professor scowling behind him. She notices Al.
All the lonely people, where do they all come from?
Mm-hmm.
There's a Beatles song you were named after.
Three Splendors.
Wow, full service. Want me to come down there? You want to join me in here?
Elle gestures toward the office. Rising from the floor, she slings her bag over her shoulder. As they enter the office, Elle's expression turns serious.
I think I'm gonna leave your class.
The professor's lips tighten. The women take seats at a desk across from each other.
You're breaking up with me.
So this is what heartbreak feels like.
You never had your heart broken?
Only read about it in books.
Liar.
Sure.
Professor Friedman picks up food from a paper wrapper on her desk.
You know, you don't have to tell me this. You could have just not shown up.
Elle looks down. The slender young woman leans forward in her chair.
I just gotta get out of here.
Here?
The tri-state area.
You know, they say that if you walk away from things and you'll just keep walking away, start a whole history of walkaways. That sounded as lame as I thought it did.
No.
Good, because I don't have a fucking clue as how life should be lived.
Well, could you refer me to someone who does, please?
Yeah. I had a dog, Miles. Got him from a pound. He did it pretty well. He lived every day like he won the lottery.
Where's Miles when we need him?
Somewhere in Pennsylvania. Took him on a road trip, trying to be all travels with Charlie. As soon as we hit the open countryside, he starts jumping up and down like he picked up a scent or found something he'd always been looking for. Let him out. He hightails it, chasing the sun into nowhere.
He ran away?
Mm-hmm. I imagine he's happy wherever he wound up. Hooked up with some Amish people, lives on a dairy farm.
It's possible.
Elle smiles at her teacher. Professor Friedman stares contemplatively at the young woman.
I have a colleague at NYU. From my days of working with your dad there. Teaches anthropology at the American University in Paris, does some work at the Musée d'Orsay, Branly. I make a phone call, send him that dissertation you started on.
Elle nods and a shy grin spreads across her lips.
Want half a bagel?
No, I'm good, I'm good.
You getting enough to eat?
You're starting to sound maternal.
Oh, that would be a first.
When's the last time you got to talk to your son?
Some holiday too long ago. Is it sad that I don't remember?
Probably.
I should call, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Now you sound maternal.
Now, Connor exits a hardware store carrying flattened boxes under each arm. In a stairwell, he approaches his apartment, his keys clenched between his teeth. Setting the boxes down in the hall, he places the keys in the lock and enters. Inside, Connor sets the boxes down. Facing the hall closet door, he lingers a moment before turning back to the boxes. In another room, Connor packs clothes into a box. From a closet, he folds another stack of clothes over his arm. With the hanger still attached, the scruffy young man stuffs them into the box. Elle lies in bed, staring off. She picks up the phone and dials. She presses the receiver to her ear. She slides to the edge of the bed. In his apartment, Connor reaches for the phone. He picks up the receiver.
Hello? Hello?
In her room, Elle stares downward. She pulls the phone from her ear, her expression forlorn. Elle sets down the receiver. In Connor's apartment, the scruffy young man sits alone in the dimly lit room, staring off. He rises and slowly paces. Pursing his lips, Connor swallows hard. He walks off. As he re-enters the living room, he carries a baby's car seat. Stacking it atop a pile of boxes, he walks off again. When he returns, he sets other baby items on the floor. As our view pulls back, he exits again. He re-emerges carrying a small bassinet filled with blankets and stuffed animals. He sets it atop a stack of boxes. We continue to pull out of the scene as Connor walks off again. Re-entering the living room, he carries a bulky baby item and a box. He sets the bulky item on the floor, then examines the box before setting it atop a stack. Connor slicks back his hair with both hands, hesitating a moment before walking off. Elle lies awake in bed. She stares off, her finger draped over her lip. Now she descends the staircase.
With your kiss, my love again.
Noticing something in the living room, she sits on the steps. Holding each other, her parents sway to the music.
Like a leaf clings to
As Elle watches them with her head resting against the banister, tears glisten in her eyes. Elle rises. In the city, at night, she ascends the staircase of a subway entrance onto a bustling sidewalk.
We are creatures of wind.
Elle walks along a street. Street lamps glow faintly in the blurred distance ahead of her.
You touch me.
Looking up, she slows.
I hear the sound of mandolins and you kiss me.
She climbs a stoop, then slips a key into a building's front door.
With your kiss, my life begins.
Inside the stairwell, Elle walks up toward Connor's apartment. On the floor outside his door, she notices a box filled with mail. Crouching down, she sifts through the letters.
Love me, love me. Say you do.
With the mail held in one arm, Elle pulls her keys from her pocket.
Fly away with you.
She slips in through the door. In the dark apartment, Elle emerges from the foyer carrying the box of mail in her arms. She reaches out and hangs her keys on a hook by a light switch she does not turn on. Setting the mail on a table, she steps further into the apartment. In the living room, Connor lies asleep on the couch with his back to her. With soft, sad eyes, she gazes down at him. Her gaze flits to the window on the opposite wall. Now she imagines the apartment during the day. Through her perspective, we scan across the cheery room. Elle moves further into the darkened room. Through her perspective, we again view the apartment during the day. At night, Elle wears a strained expression as she moves toward the bedroom. Through her daytime perspective, we view a blurry image of Elle and Connor lying on the bed with their newborn. In the darkened apartment, Elle stops in her tracks. She stares impassively, her eyes angled downward. Now, Elle holds out a blanket. Stepping forward, she drapes it over Connor. Her expression obscured by the darkness, Elle stares down at her husband as she steps back. She sits on her knees next to the couch, her gaze unwavering. Turning her attention away from her sleeping husband, Elle picks up a stuffed animal from the floor. Holding it in her lap, she examines the little creature with a blank expression. Connor stirs, rubbing at his eyes. He notices Elle. She sets the stuffed animal down. His neck and shoulders lifted off the couch, Connor rubs his hands through his hair. As he removes the blanket, he sits up. Connor hangs his feet off the couch as his wife stares up at him. He balls up the blanket.
Do I seem like a different person to you?
You look the same to me.
Elle drops her gaze to the floor. She swallows hard.
I'm sorry.
For what?
Disappearing.
Connor nods. Slipping off the couch, he joins his wife on the floor. Elle looks away from his fixed gaze.
We'll never get to where we were.
Where was that?
She smiles.
Man.
A faint grin fades from Connor's lips.
Tell me what you're thinking.
Elle wipes tears from her eye. She swallows, then licks her lips.
I forgot what he looked like.
Connor blinks rapidly.
Sometimes I'll get a glimpse of his eyes or... the way he'd smile at me from his crib. But then he'll vanish. I can't picture his face.
Tears welling up in her eyes, Elle shakes her head. Connor scoots closer to his wife. He leans in close, looking her in the eye.
He was pale. He frowned a lot. He had your eyes, he had your nose, he had your lips, he had your
cheeks, El. He was all you. And he was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
With tears pouring from her eyes, Elle places her hands on her husband's cheeks. She kisses him deeply.
I wasn't prepared for what this feels like.
No, neither was I.
She presses her lips to his forehead. She kisses his brow as he touches her neck. They gaze into each other's eyes, then continue to kiss. Connor pulls his shirt off. He kisses her and she wraps her arms around him. He rises to his knees. Now, Elle lies with her head pressed against Connor's bare shoulder as he caresses her naked back with his fingertips.
I love you.
I know.
Later, Elle crouches over Connor, who sprawls on the floor under a blanket. Fully dressed, Elle slowly walks past the sleeping man to grab her jacket off the floor. As she picks up her shoes, the slender woman glances at Connor's still form. She walks away, disappearing around a corner in the apartment. At his house, Julian steps into Elle's bedroom with a notepad and pen.
How's it coming?
It's coming.
As Elle packs, her father eyes the notepad.
There's a great cafe called Le Café at the Rue Tiquetonne that a lot of artsy-fartsies go to. Your mother and I used to go there when we visited her parents. I met Jean-Marie Leclésio there once before he won his Nobel.
Cool.
And you should get some of those big French macaroons at La.
He writes.
Dorée. In Saint-Germain. Call me when you do.
Her father rips out the page.
And I will live vicariously through you.
I will. Thanks.
Elle folds the paper and tucks it into her bag. Turning away, Julian looks around the bedroom.
I lost you in the ocean once.
What?
The older man sits in a chair in the corner and faces Elle.
I lost you in the ocean once.
Elle sits on the bed.
We'd rented a house at Ditch Plains Beach on Montauk. When you could afford Montauk. You were about two. Your mother was pregnant with Katie. And I took you down swimming one afternoon. And not a lot of people down there. I waded out, holding you, thinking at one point this might not be the best idea. But you were game. Or I imagined that you were game because you never ever seemed scared.
Elle grins briefly.
Of anything. The Atlantic is moody and a big set of waves snuck in. We made it under the first one. You were clinging to my neck. But we got caught in front of the second. And I came up without you. I've never felt anything like that. the throes of that stupid couple seconds, treading the white water. And then, miraculously, I felt you at my feet. I never told your mother. Never told anyone. It was the worst and best moment of my life.
The older man looks at his daughter. She returns his emotional gaze. Julian drops his stare, then glances to the side with teary eyes. His gaze darts around the room, and he stands.
Okay.
He points to a bag.
Is this ready?
Yeah. I'll be downstairs in a bit.
Okay.
Taking the bag, the older man leaves Elle alone in the bedroom. She looks at her remaining bag. Walking down the hall, Elle arrives in Katie's bedroom. She looks around, then slides open the closet door. Elle reaches for the framed photo, tucked away on the upper shelf, then leaves the room. As she walks down the stairs, she passes the cluster of photos on the wall. Elle stops and hangs the picture in the gap between frames. She looks at the photo showing herself, Connor, and their sleeping baby. As Elle continues down the stairs, our view lingers on the family portrait. Outside, Julian stands at the open trunk of a car. Mary holds a glass of wine and smiles as Elle approaches.
What do you got?
Chardonnay?
Mary hands it over, and Elle takes a sip. She nods.
It's good, huh?
Mm-hmm. The older woman embraces her daughter.
You know that I'm full of shit, right?
Depends on the day.
But you know that I love you,
Elle and her mother kiss each other's cheeks as Katie leads Philip over.
Say goodbye to Elliot, okay?
Elle picks him up.
Okay.
Goodbye, chickadee. You make sure that they behave, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
She sets Philip down, then walks to the car.
What time is it in France?
It is past your bedtime.
Why?
As Elle tosses a bag through the back window, Julian opens the passenger door.
Don't be a stranger.
Elle embraces her father.
I won't.
She climbs into the car with Katie.
I don't want to go to bed. It's still light out.
You don't have to go to bed, sweetie. Be good, okay? I'll be back.
When is Annie Ann coming back?
She'll be back next summer.
Elle looks out the passenger window with a smile, and her family watches the car roll away. As Katie drives, Elle stares distantly. The blonde looks both ways, then turns the steering wheel. Fade to black. The front entrance of Connor's dad's restaurant fades into view. Inside, Connor does paperwork at the bar as workers clean the empty establishment. Wearing a suit jacket and collared shirt, Connor tucks a pen in his pocket and secures the papers into a clipboard. He looks around as he walks along the curved bar.
Hey guys, I'm gonna go take a stroll before the rush, okay?
Okay.
He passes Phoebe and Stu at the hostess station. Connor steps outside. He taps on his phone, then tucks the device into his inner jacket pocket as he arrives at an intersection. A pair of bikers wait as Connor crosses the street, and cars slow as they approach. On a residential sidewalk, and with his jacket off, Connor passes in and out of soft shadows. Connor stares at the ground as he walks. He looks up briefly. Now, our view follows at a distance as Connor approaches an intersection. Behind Connor, a blurred figure in a long coat walks in the same direction. Connor looks both ways, and our view swings around him as he crosses the street. Connor turns down a dark path leading into a park. As he walks along a decorative fence, a couple passes in the opposite direction. Dotted streetlights shine through trees, bathing the path in a dim glow. Turning to the side, Connor stops and stares past a fenced area. Fireflies flicker among the trees. With a lingering gaze, Connor takes a few tentative steps, then moves on. Near the entrance to the park, Elle walks along the decorative fence. Connor strolls down the path as Elle follows at a distance. Walking with a steady gait, Elle drops her hands into the pockets of her long coat. Connor rounds a corner, then runs a hand through his hair. Still behind him, Elle walks along the main path unnoticed. Fireflies blink among the trees as Elle arrives at the bend and turns to follow Connor. Titles appear. Written and directed by Ned Benson. Produced by Cassandra Koulikoundis, Ned Benson. Produced by Jessica Chastain, Todd J. Laborowski, Emmanuel Michael. Executive Producers, Kirk D'Amico, Peter Pastorelli. Executive Producers, Brad Coolidge, Melissa Coolidge. Executive Producers, Kim Waltrip, Jim Casey, Erica Murray. Our view lingers on the park as Connor and Elle disappear down the path. Executive Producers, Wix Walker, Jason Durant Walker, Abby Wittridge. Edited by Christina Bowden. Director of Photography, Christopher Blauvelt. Production Designer, Kelly McGahey. Costume Designer, Stacey Batat. Fade to black. Music by Sun Lux. Co-executive producer, Estelle Lasher. Jessica Chastain. James McAvoy. Speaking silence, Nina Arianda. Viola Davis. How it followed you. Bill Hader. Kieran Hines. Isabelle Huppert. William Hurt. Jess Weixler. Nikki M. James, Jeremy Shamos. Casting by Monica Mickelson. The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. Them. The Weinstein Company presents a Unison Films, Dreambridge Films, Standard Deviations production. In association with Myriad Pictures, Kim and Jim Productions, Division Films. And we raise to raise. Credits roll. Unit Production Manager, Jason Sokoloff. First Assistant Director, Shahrazad Sherry Devani. Second Assistant Director, Scott Friedman. Additional Editor, Abby Jukowitz. Post-Production Supervisor, Jennifer Lane. Cast. James McAvoy as Connor Ludlow, Jessica Chastain as Eleanor Rigby, Nina Arianda as Alexis, Viola Davis as Professor Friedman, Bill Hader as Stuart, Kieran Hines as Spencer Ludlow, Isabelle Huppert as Mary Rigby, William Hurt as Julian Rigby, Jess Weixler as Katie Rigby, Nikki M. James as Sia, Jeremy Shamos as Evangelist, Wyatt Ralph as Philip, Brendan Donaldson as Casimir Waiter, Darren P. Stewart as Guy Walking on Bridge, June Miller as Elderly Woman, Lawrence Chiopa as Elderly Man, Julie Serda as Nurse, Sasha Eden as Coffee Truck Barista, Jonathan Fernandez as Barfight Guy, Justine Salata as Barfight Girl, Musto Pelinkovici as Ukrainian Cabbie, Raphael Feldman, Michael King as Paramedics, Jimmy Palumbo as Rental Car Attendant, Will Beinbrink as Gary the Dentist, Ryan Eggel as Guy from Club, Marta Milans as Phoebe. Song credits: Don't Wake the Dead, Variations for Orchestra on a Theme by Haydn, Opus 56A, Con Moto, Valentine's Day, Concerto for Piano and Orchestra No. 23 in A Major, KV 488, Adagio, The Process, How to Talk to Girls, Nam, Concerto for King Ferdinand IV of Neapel, No. 44, HOB 74 in F Major, Living Concert No. 4, Adante, Sailing, A Great Design, Not Supposed to, Concerto for Violin and Orchestra No. 4 in D Major, KV 218, Andante Cantabile, The Blame, The Lucky One, Dance Across the Sky, So in Love, Whiskey in My Blood, Concerto for Violin and Orchestra No. 3 in G Major, KV 216, Adagio, Blue Ball Blues, Went to War, Me Without You, No Resisto Mas, Dancing with the Lights Out, Can't Hear It, Jungle Remix, Move On, Seattle Bandstand, Wild as the Wind, No Fate Awaits Me, Race to Erase. Copyright 2014, The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, LLC, all rights reserved. Country of First Publication, United States of America. The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby, LLC, is the author of this motion picture for purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto. The characters and events depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. The Disappearance of Eleanor Rigby. Them.